In this week, on the 30th of September 2013, the club revealed it was working with Galliard Homes to build a new community-focused stadium on the Greyhound site on Plough Lane. There's a long way to go before the plans become reality, Chief Executive Eric Samuelson said. First, we need the support of Merton Council for a football stadium on the site. Second, the designation must be reviewed and accepted by an independent adjudicator. The long-term aim is to get us back to our spiritual home. If you build it, they will come. We did, and they do. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go.
Hello, hello, dear listener. Welcome to another special edition of the Same Old Wombles podcast. Very excited today. So let's do some intros. First of all, hello, my friend Niall Cooper. How are you doing?
Mickey Cooper. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you very much. And welcome to our man with the buttons, the producer, Professor Adam Proctor. How are you, Adam?
I'm fine. New students are trying to give me a cold, so I've had a pretty rough first day of term. But, you know.
Oh,
if I didn't have something to moan
about, that's
what
you
would
do.
What would I be doing here?
Exactly. What would it be? We'll get on to Bassett.
We need to have you there, Adam, doing it. And I think that just adds to the tone that our dear listener expects from the mighty Same Old Wombles.
Yeah. And you'll get to talk about Bishop's kicks later on, Adam. So I know that's something you enjoy. Anyhow, but we're excited because we've got a special guest again. Tall Mark Lewis is away. He's I think he's in Venice. And I'm upset he didn't call in from a gondola. Anyhow, but we have got a Wimbledon royalty, I like to think, a supporting legend in Mr. Joe Blair. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks, mate. I don't think I've ever been called that before, but...
I think that is the sufficient hype that is required for Joe. So well done, Matt, and welcome, Joe.
I am your listener.
Good to see you.
So...
I'm here from you.
You're a supporting legend. You've been there for the beginning, and before that. So listen, what I want to do, Joe, is I'm just going to ask
on,
you,
Matt. How can you be from the beginning and before that?
Not that old.
Wow. Okay. Now, if we're going to get into semantics, that's the line you don't want to cross. Just Joe, what I want to ask you some quick fire questions, so we can get up to speed on your your time with the Dons, supporting the Dons. And then we'll go on and we'll have a chat about, what is it, 3 on the spin, 4 on the spin? I'm losing track already how many it's on the spin. So first of all, Joe, what was your first match? Your first Wimbledon match?
I was reminded of this exact date by Mikey T a few years ago. So now I definitely remember it. It was the 6th of December, 1980, a 1-1 draw at Plough Lane against Darlington.
Oh, mate, fantastic. Your favourite match?
Definitely the cup final in terms of significance and achievement and just, you know, kind of something you're never ever going to forget, and loads of other great games over the years, some brilliant ones as the AFC Wimbledon incarnation. So I would say the West Ham game in the FA Cup, where we beat them 4-2. And you know, I was lucky enough to see that rise from fourth division to what's now the Premier League through the 80s. So there were some amazing games there. Beating Spurs 5-1 at Plough Lane would be a highlight as well.
Mate, that was amazing. I'm loving this. It's fantastic. Okay, favourite goal?
Ooh, Robbie Earl overhead kick against Spurs in the FA Cup was a pretty good one. More recently, but not that recently, as Sim Johnson at Kings Meadow. That was a pretty decent one as well.
Yeah. And your favourite ground, original Plough Lane, new Plough Lane?
For me, the original. I don't remember the entire quote, but there's a Bobby Robson quote about, you know, the first time a kid sees their football stadium, you know, their local football stadium for the first time. And for me, that was at Plough Lane in 1980. So definitely the old one.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I thought I'd throw that in the mix. Brilliant. Cheers, mate. Now it's seen, now everyone knows you. This is how long he's been supporting the Dons. He was there from the beginning when we had to reform again. And it's just all exciting times. That was exciting times going through the 80s. Obviously, the FA Cup, everything is starting again. But now this seems like an exciting time as well. I think someone was saying, Niall, you pointed out to me the other day, wasn't it? This our second best ever start in the back as AFC Wimbledon in the EFL.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So there's only one season we've done better than this, and that was last season. So, you know, not a bad thing to follow. If we're going to do the same route as we did last year, I think I'll happily take a playoff spot.
Yeah.
You know.
And Saturday's game was immense. Again, frustrating. 12:30 kickoff. I couldn't get there in time for happy hour. But I saw Joe. Joe, did you manage to get there for happy hour?
I very briefly managed to be in the happy hour and just about get served. There was quite a sizable crowd considering the early kickoff. I was pretty surprised.
Yeah, it was. I have to talk about the service. It was a bit. There was a. I got there and I'd missed happy hour. I got to the queue at the bar behind the south stand, and there was only like three or four people in front of me. But I was there for 20 minutes. It was just a bit weird. There was something going on. I think they'd run out of both. Wimbledon World Bowl like this, San Miguel and the Wimbledon Lager. So the only lager they had was Stella. So they had the Stella's lineup. No one was ordering Stella because we can't have that much Stella at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. But no one was communicating. No one was saying anything to the queue. So people were sort of like coming up ordering. The guy was like going back to the staff behind who had no idea what was going on. And then you had just people standing around doing nothing, just looking out into the crowd like, what am I meant to do? Maybe clear up some cups. At least talk to the supporters. So it was just a bit shambolic. And the people I was talking around me were really frustrated. So that was annoying. But what I did notice is as well as selling beers, they were selling pies and sausage rolls. I've never noticed that before in the South Stand. So clearly they're trying to make up for the fact that my pie aren't coming there anymore by selling pies and sausage, by selling what's it called? What's the pies? The cheap dodgy pies you get in the supermarket.
Oh, Fray Bentos.
Anyhow, yeah, selling those sort of pies.
Fray Bentos.
But I have to say, I thought the food offer was all right. I mean, it's more expensive, obviously, than last year, but I think it's all right. I think the food offering's all right. But the beer was I was for the first time ever for me, I was annoyed. It's one two to the club, sort it out. But on to the match, which was talk about a game of two halves. It was,
you know,
amazing.
What? I'm gonna go all contemporary on this, right?
Yep.
Is the Ryder Cup, for which I know this isn't a thingy, it just reminded me totally of Saturday. Because we were awesome for the first half, like absolutely awesome. And we were all going, wow. You know, we weren't saying it because we all believe in the football gods, but like 4-0, 5-0 could be great. Could be one of those great, fantastic days. And then those annoying people from across the water, right, then went and staged something of a comeback and scared the living heebie-jeebies out of me. And had they got a tie, that would have been a disaster considering our brilliant, fantastic first half. So there is just a horrible parallel. I was just last night while listening to the Ryder Cup, all I was doing was having horrible flashbacks to the second half on Saturday, and at least we got it over the line. So thank God for that. So I just had to put that out there because it's been what's been plaguing my brain for that, having been a bit of a sportsman. But there was too much of a parallel. We were great first half, best first half I've seen us play for a while. Second half, not so good.
Yeah, I thought it was, I thought the first half was brilliant. I mean, we should have been 1-0 up after 10 minutes when Hippolyte was put through, ran through on goal. And I'd have put money on him at least hitting the target. But for him to miss, that was... So I generally thought at that moment, because we were playing so well and not scoring, it wasn't going to be our day. It was going to be one of those sort of days. But then, a brilliant cross by Seddon and Bugle. He gets it. Oh no, we've got the Bugle fan club with us now. So, Adam, what do you reckon?
What? He's on fire. He's amazing, awesome, back. Both of those goals were down to him, 100%. So I was well chuffed because I think he had a bit of a... Yeah, people were doubting that he could kind of rise to this level. But he's doing it great. So I think we're going to have tough decisions in terms of who gets picked, which is a great thing to have, actually. So, yeah, I was really pleased. I mean, the first half was great. The second half, oh, my word. It was so bad. I was just like, goodness sake. And the half 12 kickoff, everything was wrong about Saturday in lots of different ways. Thankfully, I didn't leave really, really upset because we won. So that was good, you know. But yeah, it was a bit weird. I had a better outing in the beer because I thought I was going to miss happy hour. But actually, I think I picked up my beer in the pub at maybe 3 or 4 minutes past 12 and it was still £5. So I was very, very pleased about that. I thought the till was my auto like check over and I thought, oh, I'm going to be stuffed. But for whatever reason, there's obviously a little buffer, which was quite nice. So, yeah.
Yeah, the Adam buffer. I love the fact that Bugle's on fire and he's scored one goal.
No, the second goal was literally set up by him. Come on.
I mean, he didn't score it. So, I mean, I admit...
No,
I mean,
was good. I no, admit, I was muted. I think it's fine. That,
the truth is that he's been in the side. Since Bugle's been in the side, we've played 3-1-3. So I think, that's going to be very difficult to get Brown back in that side. Joe, what was your thoughts on it?
I've missed a substantial chunk of the start of the season due to being away on holiday. So the Rotherham home game was literally my first game of the season. And both games that I've seen, Rotherham and Saturday against Wickham, we've looked comfortably a League One side. Obviously there's parts of those games, particularly in the case of Saturday, where we were hanging on a little bit, but weathered the storm and did what we seemed to be comfortable with and we were quite comfortable with last season, which was sort of sitting deep and hanging on to leads, you know, staying in a very sort of disciplined formation and stuff. But we've looked good in both the games that I've seen so far. I was kind of a bit worried about coming back from holiday and jinxing the good start to the season, but it does seem to have sort of continued.
So, Joe, you're saying a comfortable League One side, comfortable playoff side?
I wouldn't say playoffs because I think we all know that the January transfer window is going to kick in and teams that have got some budget will spend to push for promotion. Teams that are probably in a relegation place that feel they shouldn't be and have got some budget will do likewise to get out of that. And whether we can compete and continue to improve through that, we don't know. But I mean, from what I've seen so far, winning several games, losing narrowly apart from the Bolton away game, you know, losing to teams that are fancied only by the odd goal, sometimes quite a fluky goal. What you're seeing so far suggests that we can compete, and I would be thinking at least mid-table, if not, you know, kind of slightly higher than that, with the caveat that things will change around the January transfer window.
Yeah. We just hope that Senway doesn't get called back. But it's weird that it's, usually when we come up to the January, we're always thinking about all the players that get pulled back. And I think over the last few seasons, we've had, you know, 4 or 5 players that we were like, a bit nervous about. I guess this time round we're going to be worried if anyone's going to go. But I don't know. I don't know if there's anyone who's catches the eye. I mean, obviously, Adam, you'll be worried that Bugle's going to be sold. But I don't know if we're that sort of team that have got. You know, in the past we had Al Hamadi who stood out, and we had Asal who stood out, and Curry. So I don't know if we've got anyone that stands out like that. What does anyone think? Nye, what's your thoughts? If he can unmute himself, let's see. It's technology for Nye.
Right, okay. Yeah, no, I think there isn't, and that's the point, because we're a team. Which just goes me to another Ryder Cup parallel. Right. Is the reason why the Americans are shit and aren't going to win the Ryder Cup is because they're a bunch of individuals, whereas we're a team. So when you get us playing together, then that's where we do really well. I think when Johnson and Lewis are together, there's an understanding, and that's really strengthens that. So you could look at all these pairings going across the pitch that I think is where it is. There isn't, I think Jake Greaves is like the dogs for me. And Jake Greaves is like the person that I think is absolutely essential. But again, you know, does Jake Greaves do better because we've got Alistair Smith? You know, in that sort of thing where you've kind of got, I just, We're a team, and that's what's really good.
And so this goes on to another thing which I'm interested about, and it goes back to the Brown thing, because I think that probably Bugle and Stevens and the way that Bugle can his as a focal point, he brings people into the game. Now I think Brown is an incredibly talented player, but does he bring as much to the team as Bugle does? I mean, that's an interesting thing. I mean, just think is he more of an interesting. I was surprised that we signed him, to be honest with you. I think he's a great player, but does he fit sometimes within our team? What do we think? Not sure.
I mean, he definitely is a bit more of an individual player for sure. But I do like Brown because he's kind of quite explosive. It's a different type of player to obviously Bugle in lots of ways. It's not, you know, which I think again could surprise opposition at various points. So I think that's a good shout, you know. Yeah, I think he's just a different player, actually. That's the main thing. He just brings a different, yeah.
I agree with Adam. You're going to need, across the course of a season, you need variety. And, you know, he's not the battering ram that Omar is, but he's the kind of player that's probably a bit of a nightmare to play against because he's very unpredictable. And, you know, I hate to sort of suggest he should be a substitute all the time, but those kind of people that then come on and change the game, you know, run defenders ragged and always liable to have a shot or, you know, create some kind of opening, they're horrible people to play against once you're tired and it's later in the game. So, you know, there's definitely a role for him. And what happens over the course of the season is that might be his role at the moment. And then there'll be injuries or, you know, different tactical formations that we need. And then he starts.
Yeah. You've got to love a super sub, haven't you? And that's kind of what he could become, which would be really useful for us.
Well, I think it's going to be either Brown or Bugle that comes off the bench. But I think for now, it's Bugle's place to lose. And he has been fantastic. And you're right. He's the second goal we scored was brilliant. And an amazing strike by Seddon, who I think we're all agreeing is become one of these real sort of steady players. The first time he joined us, the first time he was with us, he was kind of like this excited, brilliant sort of pop of a player running around doing stuff, and we all thought he was excellent. The second time he came back to us, we were all less impressed. But now I think he's found exactly his place. He knows exactly what he's doing. And I think, Niall, you were saying to me the other day, it's kind of almost a step up from Tilly in a weird way because he's got that defensive nous to him.
100%. I think the reason why, like, I mean, Tilly, we love Tilly, but Tilly's an attacking player. And when you're in League Two and we're bossing some games, whatever, then Tilly's a good player to have because he's going to get that opportunity to go forward. But in League One, you want an intelligent defender who knows how to cover that bit. And we're just so much more secure with Seddon there than we would be with Tilly. So I think Seddon is a step up for us as a team, having him in there instead of Tilly.
Yeah, I agree. And a terrific goal, by the way. I think it was an amazing goal. Brilliant the way that the ball's come through to Bugle. He's held off his man, put a ball into Seddon, who's hit it first time. I think that was one of the best goals I've seen down at Plough Nine. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Obviously not as good as that Robbie Earl overhead kick, Joe, but you know, we can't all be Robbie Earl. More's the pity.
But it was one of those goals where, you know, it's a bit of quick thinking because it's a confident player who decides not to take the extra touch and hits it with his nearest foot the minute the ball comes to him and doesn't necessarily give the goalkeeper a lot of time to get set and ready. So in terms of like taking that opportunity, it was, you know, a really, really well-executed goal, both the setup by Omar and obviously Seddon and then making sure he didn't miss the chance.
Brilliant. And then I just want to say they scored a goal. I don't go into the opposition. I mean, like, it came off his flipping knee or something. And then they get a sort of, they think they've got an equaliser. But anyone in the ground looking knows, and I can't believe it became controversial. And I was watching the highlights and the Sky highlights. They weren't even explaining it properly what happened. The ball's gone off. It's a throw-in to us. They took the throw-in. And then all of our players have stopped playing. It's come into the box, so they put it in. But it was the linesman was clearly putting a throw in our directions. So what on earth is controversial about that? Well, nothing.
I find it funny the Wickham manager saying that the linesman or referee's assistant, as we're supposed to call them these days, had no business making that decision. The ball crossed the line and went out of play. The linesman has to put their flag up.
That's his job.
Exactly.
I mean, I just found that the most ludicrous thing that people got upset about. It's like, you can't.
It was weird, wasn't it?
The linesman was doing his job.
Because even my dad was watching it on Sky because of the early kickoff, he didn't come. And he was like, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, it literally went off and the wrong player threw the ball on. I'm like, what? Yeah, I mean, again, sometimes you have the linos who kind of, you bow to the pressure of the ref, but he kept his flag up and did his job, and that was fine. But yeah, obviously, and all of our players stopped playing. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't understand what the issue was. It was pretty obvious what happened.
No, I know. And it became a thing, which is just really mental. Oh, dear. Talking of things becoming things, the Don's Trust Board election, it rumbles on. It's so much fun, isn't it? I just want to sort of talk about things like cyberbullying because, and I think Niall and I think Joe, I think you've been, I mean, I've seen stuff put about in your direction, and it's not fun to be on the receiving end of some horrendous personal attacks. It's not a fun thing, and I think I have to a lesser degree, and I think it's all well and good apologizing, but if the person you're apologizing to doesn't accept the apology, you can't then just go, well, I've apologized. You know, then I think my sense is that if you're going to be standing on the DTB, probably one of the things you might need to do in a run-up to it is do things around, training around the impact of cyberbullying and see what that, go through some sort of training. There needs to be something there. But, it's really difficult. No.
I mean, like, obviously, I've been there, and that's one of the reasons why I left the board. And I think it's probably also why Rule 10 has come into play. You know, we've got a real issue with cyberbullying. You know, we've got an issue with the fact that there are a whole load of people that we know that are really good, talented people that are going to be taken, second thoughts about ever standing for the board because of this sort of behaviour. And, you know, we have to be quite vigilant against it, and we have to be really protective. And I think people who talk about free speech or whatever on it, and, you know, I would normally say I'm a big advocate for free speech, but there's a line. It's not an absolute right, in my opinion, because of the consequences it can have. And in this scenario, it has had significant consequences. I have seen what was the tweets, what was the language that was used. It has come to my attention. I fully know what the scenario is. This is not some like simple, nice little old, you know, it's not banter, right? Which some people are saying. It is actually quite a serious thing. And I think in this scenario, people who are defending it are kind of, hold on, wake up and smell the coffee here a bit. You know, are we allowing this? Because that is exactly the reasons why, look, we have no women standing. We've only got people who are either retired, who've kind of feel they've got the mental health and mental strength to cope with it. That is not a fair reflection of the fan base, and it's not a fair reflection of the people who actually we want to be standing in. That is a really serious issue. So while Rule 10 is probably a bit clunky, the reason behind its existence is because there's a problem that we need to address. And I think we can't have that sort of scenario. I think some of the attitudes and stuff that's come through are wrong, simply, in my opinion. And I think we need to really look at it and kind of address it. And that's it. You know, I sit down and people disagree with me for a whole bunch of things. And yes, I'm a bit of an activist and so on. And I kind of opinionated and so, as we know on this pod. But you know, there are a whole load of other people I can think of that would make brilliant, brilliant Don's Trust board members. And they're going to just be not wanting to touch it with a barge pole. And it's because of this sort of thing. That's my attitude. I'm ranting. I realise that. I'm sure.
No, you are ranting now, but we let you do it. Joe, what's your thoughts on it all? Because I'm interested to know.
Yeah. So, I mean, any sort of mature and professional organisation is going to take things that are posted online very seriously. You know, there's a whole load of stuff that gets posted on various social media sites, which, you know, quite frankly, is very trivial and not worthy of attention. But, you know, I think back to a time about 20 or so years ago, I was working at an organization, you know, a big FTSE 100 company, and several people in my team came into possession of some, shall we say, not suitable for work material on their work computers. Shared it within the organization, shared it outside of the organization, and were basically sacked within about 2 days flat, right? So organizations that want to be mature, professional, you know, be supported by their members and their customers are going to take this kind of stuff properly seriously. So then you get into situations where, you know, if someone's sworn at somebody on social media, is that a bar to being a candidate in the Don's Trust elections? Probably not, right? Yeah. If there is a extensive track record of a candidate sending, you know, kind of not suitable for work or unsolicited or malicious communications to people, and it's gone on for a long period of time, then maybe that is where the bar is set. You know, it's a rock and a hard place situation for the Don's Trust, right?
Yeah.
Because you either stop somebody who's done that from standing and deal with the fallout with various people moaning about transparency and things, we'll come on to that in a second, or the person stands and all of that material is then shared within the context of the election campaign, probably derails the election campaign, and certainly crowds out the candidates who just want to get on, get their message across, and then hopefully get elected. So, you know, it's a real rock and a hard place situation for the organisation to be in. And I would also just like add a little bit of context in that it's been quite a rocky road in the terms of the last intake from the elections last year, when two of the highest vote winning members from that election sort of left with no real explanation as to why they had gone. You know, they could well be personal reasons or things for that. And quite frankly, anybody should be entitled to their privacy. But there was, I believe, a collective decision by the board to respect those people's privacy, allow them to make their fairly vanilla statements and then not be engaged in the board. But now we end up in a situation where at least one person, if not a couple, who were on that board are now resigning, citing transparency, when they were quite happy for really no real information to be provided when those people moved on. So it's all a bit confusing. Maybe I'm being naive and expecting some sort of principles and consistency.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think we need to. Sorry, Adam. I think you're right, and we need to get something in place. And maybe that is Rule 10. And I'm not saying that. You know, listen, people make mistakes, and but you need to go through a process of rehabilitation to do that. You need to realize what you've done is wrong, and it hurts someone, and you need the people that you've hurt to listen to that and understand it, and for there to be a real sense of contrition before you, and then you can enter it. Then you can go forwards from there. Is my sense. I mean, part of me though is Joan. Part of me is like you. It's like, you know, let these people stand. Whoever wants to stand stands, and if they do, then you know there might be tough questions that are asked. But then again, you're right. It's like, do we suddenly get bogged down in dealing with that situation and not giving the oxygen to other candidates who are standing on the platform? So it's really difficult. And I guess all the board members who've stood down recently, they're all entitled to their own opinion. But I think people have to understand that just because it's online doesn't make bullying any less painful.
Yeah, I was going to say, and the other thing, I mean, I've been thinking about this quite a bit in different ways and to be as sensitive as possible, but I think there's some people obviously saying that Rule 10 has stopped people from standing. I don't go for that. Rule 10 is there to suggest that you can't bully or harass people online, and if you do, and particularly of other members of the Don's Trust, that's got to be looked into, and you can't then just stand because you want to stand. And it, it goes back to this other thing again. It's like free speech doesn't mean you're allowed to say anything you want. Like, that's not what free speech means. And I don't understand why people get confused by these kind of terms.
Well, there's,
you know, it's just mad.
Exactly. There's free speech, and there's hate speech. And that's it. So, you know, like, you're allowed to say certain things that you believe in, but when it becomes personal and it's potentially putting people in danger, then it's.
We know that the one was underground guest book or whatever was taken offline for a while because of messages that are on there. I didn't see any of these particular messages, but I understand they were pretty bad and they were libelous in all kinds of ways, and so that was off for a while. And I think they've increased moderators there. And the same in Discord, you know, seeing a bit of that where moderators are having to get more and more involved in the messages. It's kind of strange. I mean, I do quite a bit of stuff with social media at work, and to think about, and I'm trying to, you know, again, it's just, I don't know why people behave so strangely on social media, but it's because they can be these keyboard warriors. And I think that it just needs, people need to understand that you can't publish something online just because you can. You shouldn't, you know. So yeah, I think rule 10 is a good thing. Whether it needs rewording or not, I'm not sure, even trying to find the exact details. But again, it's like, I think the election steering group should be allowed to look at online activity and make decisions as to whether they think that makes you ineligible to stand for a position. I don't think that's unfair. I don't think that's blocked anyone, and it's got, and all of this noise has kind of got in the way of the stuff we need to do, which is get some new people on the Duns Trust board and think about, like, the finances that we're going to need over the next year or so and all the stuff the board has got to do. But I think, and as Niall said, this is putting people off standing, and it will certainly put off minorities from standing even more so. So let's try and, like, be sensible.
Yeah, it does worry me that we're not getting the different people standing. I mean, you know, my opinions, I think that probably we need to maybe look at how we change the board structure and have some co-opted people in particular places, and maybe have just seven people that are voted on. But that's just my opinion, of which people are entitled to disagree with respectfully. Yeah, I mean, Joe, have you ever stood for the board? Were you on the board?
No, with the committee very briefly, like 24 years ago or something. But no, never stood for the Duns Trust board. Considered it at times, but didn't really have the space professionally or personally to get involved to that extent.
Yeah.
Joe, ignore everything we've just said in the last 10 minutes. You know, I mean, my thought on that is that it's people like Joe who should be feeling that it's not something that's scary and that it's doable and it's achievable and it's something that is actually rewarding and means something. And there were times when I was on the board where it did tick some of those boxes, but there was an awful lot of times where it ticked a whole load of other boxes. So it's a disappointment for me that there are so many talented individuals that just, you know, whatever, we talk about it so often.
I think I'd
like to see other podcasts get behind this and go, right, well, actually, look, we need to just cut this out, because we're actually, all of us got a vision, which is we want the club to be a success. And therefore, that's what we need to focus on and actually kind of, you know, be a lot more positive about what we've achieved. At times we need to just stop and have a look and say, we have a ground that we built ourselves. It's in Plough Lane. It's back where it was. We started on a pitch where there were hay bales around it so people could try and get a decent view of a bunch of players that we've never met. We didn't have a kit. We didn't have anything. And now we are, what, sixth in League One. We're above that other team in Buckinghamshire quite comfortably. And we're now, we've started this pod talking about potentially being in the playoffs. That's what we have achieved. Let's be a bit more visionary and a bit more positive rather than busy sticking knives in the backs of people and scaring people off. It's not the right way to go about it.
Yeah, I think there's also clearly, and I don't know how you achieve it, but there's clearly need for sort of the role of the Duns Trust board to evolve. You know, I've often sort of spoken to friends and other Wimbledon supporters and said my perception of it was that there was far too much doing and not enough governing. You know, meetings clearly go on for hours and hours, judging by the minutes and stuff like that. The minutes take a while to get out. You know, people who don't really see the inner workings see that stuff and go, well, it's going to take up such a chunk of my time. Mm. I'm not going to get anywhere. So less interested in getting involved, or certainly feeling that you're not going to get a return on the time that you put in. And I think that lots of people can see that, you know, really if it can move, and nobody, I think has got a kind of one, you know, silver bullet idea for how to evolve it or how to reform it. But in terms of maybe moving towards more specified roles where, you know, kind of there is a need for someone with, you know, legal speciality, someone with planning speciality, someone who's a general representative of supporters, and you stand for those positions. So it's quite clear what you're going to be doing and what competencies you're bringing to the table when you stand, might be better than this kind of general sort of free-for-all popularity contest where everyone promises better comms, everyone promises greater transparency, and then they get on the board and they find that actually, you know, when you're working for a commercial organisation, there are things you can't say to, you know, the people you're representing. Even with the best will in the world that you may wish to, you jeopardise a deal, you jeopardise a sponsor, you know, you jeopardise a transaction of some kind, and you just can't say those things. And people have been promising time and time again over election after election that the comms are going to get better and they're going to be the person that brings transparency to the table, and they never do it. So things need to be reformed.
I think you're right, Joe. I think the big thing for me, and I think you hit on it perfectly there, is that people need to understand if you're going to be on the board, it is a governance role. That's what it is. And I think some people get frustrated that they're not doing. You know, they come up with ideas and throw these ideas and say, do this, do this, do this. And it's just like, but no, I mean, there are people who are working, the PLC and that organisation are working on the ground on a day-to-day basis. Every day they're in the office doing that. And in theory, the board come in and they have that governance. I don't know how often the board are meeting, monthly, let's say. But their whole thing is to hear back from the... I mean, I've sat on boards and I've presented to boards. So I know the way that it works as a sort of voluntary sector or charity. Working in the cultural sector, you hear from the people who are delivering the work on the day-to-day basis, and you can give them suggestions. You can say, well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? But a lot of times they will come to you and say, can you help? And the board will help where they can. But it's a governance role. It's an overseeing role. It's not a doing role. It's a governance thing. But to have people on that board who are specialists in particular areas is really helpful, because then you can go to person X and go, listen, I've got a problem here with this particular bit of finance. Can you help out? You've got a finance expert there, or you've got a comms expert there you can go to for sort of like advice or mentoring. That's the way that it works. It's not about delivering things. That's not what the DTB is. What we can do is we can call things out if we see there are problems. So I understand there might have been problems with the volunteers. So we need to, you know, we need to be able to call that out if we see things. And you know, if supporters are coming to the DTB at the kiosk or somewhere else and giving ideas, we can feed that back. But it's not doing. It's a governance role.
I don't know, Matt. Where you're right in a lot of sense, and I think Joe's point about, and you know, Matt, because I've banged on about this before, Joe's point about electing specialists and having people on there so you have those skills set aside. That for me is definitely where I think the direction of travel should be. Because otherwise you leave yourselves open to gaps. And if the roles aren't filled or we don't have enough candidates, then we co-opt. And I actually think, in addition to that, the bit that I do go with there, it's a bit of doing. And this is a bit where, as another pet thing I've always called for, is a volunteer manager, so that we can actually look at helping and supporting in those particular key areas where we can do, because there's an awful lot of talent, there's an awful lot of goodwill out there, and that's what we need to tap into. And I see that as being another thing that really the DTB should push for, because there are people who can do, but they should be doing in supporting the functions of the club. And that's what we need to do. And they are, in a way, a bit different from where the DTB is. But at the moment, we're still in this place where we haven't nailed that down. We haven't got a volunteer manager. We haven't got a DTB with specific roles. So we're definitely going to be missing certain advice areas. Who on the DTB is an expert on HR, for example? Who on the D, you know, can advocate for that? Who's like the person brilliant at doing financial contracts? They might be there, I don't know. But those are the sort of roles that we need to have that are key. As Joe says, absolutely every single time people talk about improving comms, and, you know, purposely, to be honest, I think they have improved, but they've improved because we've got a decent director of comms now in place, right? And that is an executive role. It's not something that the DTB needs to be doing.
Yeah. There you are. Yet again, we've sorted it out. I mean, I think it's amazing. We just have to get these things forward. But I think we're going to hopefully talk to Angus from the DTB after the elections, have a chat with him and put some of these things to him. And I think I really want to make it clear that just because you've done something in the past doesn't make you irredeemable. It's just taking the path forwards to make sure you're eligible to stand, and there needs to be certain things that are in place around that. I mean, let's give an example of Foyo, for example, here, who's up for the betting. So we still don't know what the outcome of that is, but he's been charged with 2,000, making 2,000 bets. Now, either we as a club have got a choice. We can go, you're in breach of contract, and we're letting you go. And that frees up some budget for us. Don't get me wrong, that's not a bad thing. Or we go, okay, we've invested in you. You know, we brought you in, we've invested in you. We can see your potential. Let's give you some support. Let's take the next steps. There's going to be some sort of charge that comes out. You have to suck it up. But we're going to be there and we're going to support you. And at the end of it, we're going to end up with someone who's in the right place. They understand, what they've done is wrong. And hopefully Foy's going to come out of it as a better player. And so if you can go with someone on a journey and go, this is a thing. And I think, and I understand listening to Ian Robinson, and I really hope you dub Ian Robinson with your version of Ian Robinson from last week, Adam. I'm hoping that, I think I understand Ian Robinson was given this brief to sort of like do that mediation thing. And it felt like he wasn't supported particularly as well in terms of what that mediation should have been and what the, what steps should have been taken. So that felt, it just feels like there are some difficult things, but we're still relatively new. We're learning all the time and we're going to make mistakes. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think of that?
And it's such a difficult one because it's a moral dilemma, isn't it? You know, because ethically, who's not going to say, right, well, let's try and stand by this player and support him because he's basically got an addiction. He's got an issue. The guy's got talent. And that if we discard him, then that's like throwing the geezer on the scrap heap and he's going to really struggle. But if we stand by him as well, then, how much are we, we're not a rich club, and that's the two bits. I lean towards supporting the guy, but that's because I'm kind of a bit, okay, look, where the Wokers podcast are going out of all the Wimbledon ones, we all know it. So obviously you'd expect the same old Wombles to go woke on this, but that's kind of where I go. Though I can understand the argument saying, right, well, cut him loose because we've got to find some, we could use that money elsewhere.
But here's the other thing. Someone who is wanting to stand on the DTB, who's made mistakes in the past, wants to apologise and stand. So I think that the DTB working with that person who wants to stand, maybe going for a process. And I think Ian Robinson felt that he'd gone through that process with him, and for whatever reason, and it wasn't the DTB that stopped him standing. It was the election steering group, which was an independent voluntary group. I think they're from people from Fulham, as much as I understand. So, you know, and I think that's a good thing. But I think if you're, you know, to go through a mediation process, to go through some training and whatever, and understand the impact. So hopefully, Foyo is getting, he's going to go through that and understand the impact. Joe, what's your thoughts? I wonder if I'm going round in circles.
the Foyo one is so difficult because, you know, were he an older player, you know, and let's be frank, were he an older player who wasn't, you know, a regular first teamer, for example, then you would be, or you'd probably find it quite easy to go, no, you should have known about this. It's your own responsibility. You cut them loose. When it's a younger player, you know, embarking on a career, you know, not a first teamer necessarily, but potentially with some future and some financial value to the club, it puts you in a position where, you know, you don't make a rash judgment. I mean, when it first came out, I was very much of the, my understanding was it, you know, it wasn't just the odd infraction.
It wasn't the odd.
And so I was like, that's too much. I mean, I don't know. It's taken a long time to make this decision pending, you know, the case, I guess. So, you know, I'm not a trust the process mantra person, but there is a process for this. And if the process is followed, let's trust it to come up with the right judgment.
Yeah. But can I throw this out there? I'd be slightly controversial in so much that I don't remember how many bets Wally Downs made, but that was the reason he was sacked.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was the level of that Foyer. So, you know, but maybe it was whilst he was our manager Foyer, it was before he joined us. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting one. But the thing we're all about is, I was going to say we're all about forgiveness, but I think our club is built on the fact that we don't forgive for us. so we want to take, you know, people that, this is the thing with football and football clubs, is that people come from very different backgrounds. They have a whole load of different opinions. We all know this. But generally speaking, we all want the best for the club. And that's the most important thing. But if we can help get people, if they want to stand on the board, if we can help get them to a place where they can do that, that is a great thing. If Foyo can become a top striker for us in a couple of years, that's be a brilliant thing as well. Right then, I think we're coming towards the end.
There's
one thing I did
want to raise briefly.
Yep,
was it's the women's team. And that's it. So there was a comment about whether the women's team should be funded or not funded. And for my view is it's a bit short-sighted to not look at supporting the women's team. And the reason why I say that, when we're looking at a growth potential of the club, right at the moment, match days for the men's team, 8,500 sell out, more or less every week. That stadium cannot get more busy or more full. It's difficult to look at how you do that. On the women's team, when they're there, right, there's shed loads of empty seats, right? There is a potential with investment to make that back relatively quickly. And when we talk to Ashley Hinks and the difference it takes in terms of wages to get that team up a level is actually really small. So a bit of brave investment could see a massive return on investment in the use of our stadium. We always talk about using the stadium 24/7, and investing in the women's team is actually a really good opportunity. And women's football is the number one growth sport in the country. We're missing a trick if we don't look at investing in it and taking it forward. So people who advocate for not investing in the women's team, I'm sorry, I disagree with you. And in fact, I go completely the other way. I think we should be doing more investment into the women's team. And that's kind of where I stand in it. I really wanted to bring that up because I know some people have been talking about it. And I just wanted to put that out there. And I think it's really important that we look in that direction.
No, I totally agree, obviously.
Yeah,
I mean, me and Niall talked about this a bit on Saturday. yeah, I was very disappointed to hear that someone was actively voting against investing in or in an area that we clearly could actually bring money in really, really quickly. And so it just seemed very, very odd and at opposition to what we want to do. You know, I want the women to be playing more often at Plough Lane, to have more people there. It's an instant win in terms of revenue income. So when we are in a really financially tight position, and yes, the men's team is doing great, but if we want to bring money in instantly, make more people come to the women's game. It's like not rocket science. So it was just, I was kind of, my mind was blown by this fact, especially as the women national team have won again, that we've seen this huge rise. You know, there's all stats that show that more and more girls are interested in football, etc. I just didn't understand that. And I have asked that question directly on Discord of the candidate who kind of mentioned that in the hustings. It wasn't in the, manifesto text. It just seemed a bit very, very short-sighted. So I was disappointed to hear that, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I was just, as Niall was talking about, the fact that, you know, we're sold out, or close to sold out, you know, every single week for the men's game. I just sort of found earlier today, the analysis is actually done by a betting company, so I won't name them, but we're the third most expensive side to support in League One. And it's done on a metric of cost of the season ticket, cost of a match ticket, cost of a burger or a pint, cost of a match shirt, replica shirt. So Luton, most expensive, Plymouth are the second, we're the third, which would suggest that we don't have a lot of headroom for, you know, sweating that asset much further without turning off a lot of supporters for the men's game. But as you've all pointed out, you know, we've got the ability to get much bigger crowds in for the women's game if it's supported and marketed well.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm not saying we've got the deepest squad, and we haven't, but a player in the men's team probably supports, you know, a huge investment in the women's team. It shouldn't be like that, by the way. If you can make a little bit of a sacrifice, you know, imagine if the team gets into the championship, like the women's championship, or even further. Yeah. So, you know, obviously, if you get in the WSL, then suddenly you're able to attract huge numbers. And so I think morally in this day and age, we have a duty to look after, you know, all of our community, and we're this wonderful community club. So let's do it.
The other thing is on the stats of making women, in terms of retail and purchasing power, they will spend something like 60-70% more than men. So actually just attracting more women to come to our grounds is just, again, financially, should be a no-brainer. So I think there's a whole element of really looking at, again, this goes back to why I'm also disappointed that the Dons Trust board is, again, basically all white men. You know, we need to be looking at where is the growth potential of this club. And the growth potential in this club exists probably in the other 50% of the population that aren't on this podcast, for example. You know what I mean? So that's where we can see real growth.
Yeah. Obviously, Hannah is on the board, and Michelle is our treasurer, and both fantastic people. But we do need more. In the last election, we just didn't. The current election going on, we haven't got any women standing, which is a real shame. And I'm wondering. Part of me wonders whether we do a disservice because we keep talking about. I wouldn't stand on the DTB because of potential abuse that I might get, and
I mean, my advice to anyone staying on the DTB is probably, sadly, stay the F off social media.
Yeah, and keep your head down. And there are lots of great things about it. We've spoken to DTB members before, and they love it. I mean, you know, the fact that a few of the people we know, obviously Martin and Alex, who sit near us, they've decided to stand again. So they must really enjoy it. So there are good things about being on the board. I know Mark has said about it, and Niall, you enjoyed it for a bit when you weren't getting a stick. And I think the other big problem is that if the club starts doing badly, suddenly you're the sharp pointy bit, aren't you? So that's the thing.
We've talked about it many a time. Like, if I was in charge of choosing the team, which I never was, right, we'd be way worse. Because Joe and I've played football with Joe, I've played football with Matt. They both know my ability to be any kind of close to being a managerial asset to any football team is pretty much close to zero.
Yeah. But no, you know, yeah. Anyhow, Joe.
So were we supposed to say, oh, no, you're being too modest there. Sorry, I mislike you.
No.
Not at all, Joe. Don't go down that route,
for God's sake.
Where my strengths and weaknesses are, and football management is not a strength.
Oh, brilliant. All right, guys. Thank you very much for today. Oh, no, wait a minute. I'm going to keep doing this thing, right? Okay, we're coming towards the end of the show and someone
I'm
else jumps in.
I'm only going to mention one thing. So it's just because by the time I edit this, it'll probably come out on Wednesday now, so that's fine. So it's just to let people know that obviously I'm part of the We Are Wimbledon Fund group. I'm not really doing a lot. Loads of other people are doing really good stuff. But basically, the next big thing that we're going to have, and obviously, if you want to invest in the men's first team, this is the way to do it, to donate to the We Are Wimbledon Fund. But also, we're going to have a pub quiz. So on the 2nd of November at 7 p.m, teams of four people can meet at the Alexandra Pub in Wimbledon, and all the proceeds will go to the first team's playing budget. So it's £20 per team. You'll get a chance to win like a bunch of stuff. I can't tell you what the stuff is yet because we're still negotiating with the club and others, but some fans have donated some things. And so there's a bunch of cool stuff, and there will be special guests apparently. So yeah, if you want to.
That's right, Adam. We'll be there. I know where you're going.
You know what it is, don't you?
Yeah, I do know what it is.
Challenge Stacey.
Yeah.
It's the Challenge Stacey slot. Excellent. I'm loving the Challenge Stacey slot.
Yeah, so I ran into Stacey at the ground on Saturday, and we've come up with a few challenges here, which I'm very
I'm only gonna do one a week, Matt. I'm only gonna say one a week. We might plan them, but there's one a week. And this one, because we looked at the challenge last week, which we were just making up on the hoop, was like do two days of the last 7 days of the walk that Zav is on. Brilliant idea, fantastic. Of course, then having checked the map, we thought it wasn't particularly fair that we sent Dubes down to Devon, which is where the last week is. So we thought we have to adjust this because that's not particularly fair. So we've looked at it and we know Dubes likes to run a little bit, right? So I think it might be the 18th of October coming, we have to check, but there is a walk that goes from Barnet to AFC Wimbledon. That walk, Zav will head off and Dubes will run it. 25 miles, I think it is. Dubes, the challenge is for, and this is to raise funds for the We Are Wimbledon Fund, brilliant link. Dubes is going to run that leg while Zav heads off at the same time. I'm assuming Dubes will win. But let's just see what happens. But there you go, Dubes. Challenge Stacey event. The challenge this week, Dubes is going to run from Barnet to AFC Wimbledon following the route.
Yep. I'd just like to say at this moment, this is the caveat that we have here. One, Dubes doesn't know that he's been challenged until literally this podcast goes out. So he's got no idea about this or any. So he might actually be doing something on the 18th of October, like watching the game.
We know he's available. He's available.
Two, we've got no idea how this is going to financially make any money. So we haven't worked that bit out either. So like, you know, what do people bet on him finishing first or Zav finishing first? So we've
got to be a sponsor Dubes for this. And it might have to be something that we link in with Walk 96. It'd probably be sensible to have a bit of fun to them as well.
Yeah, so we've got
that's the element.
Yeah, so we haven't worked that a bit out either. But anyhow, it's all good. We've got
challenge
some other
Stacey. I love
other challenges that we're planning behind his back as well. Brilliant.
Oh, then we've spoken to him about some of them. But if you've got any other ideas that you would like to challenge Stacey on, then get in contact.
Yeah,
it's
contact. Contact Niall on social media. He loves it. yeah. Right. Is there anything
same
else?
Same old Wombles. Same old Wombles. Twitter feed. X feed.
No, yeah, but I guess the thing is, we're all hoping to be at the pub quiz. I've just got to work out how I can get home because it's a Sunday and it'd be late. So I'm just not quite sure what's going to go on with trains. But, you know, that's my plan, is to also try and be there. And I think
that's a challenge in itself. Dubs has to, we have to see whether we can beat Dubs' team in the quiz.
No, but it's going to be like a quiz about football. So I'm going to be absolutely useless. So it's like pointless me even being on your team, unfortunately.
I know, but Joe's good at quizzes. Joe's good at quizzes. Joe's going to be on our team now. He doesn't know. This is how it works. I just dedicate Joe to join the quiz team along with Mikey T.
It says team of four, but we might be able to...
Mikey T's definitely on our
team. We should definitely increase our team.
I think that we...
We needed like a team of 20 to win.
Help as well. Right, anyhow.
Joe and Mikey T, that's all you need.
Yep. This is sort of like the extras. This is kind of like the bloopers reel that we're going through now. Anyhow, this is it. No more any other business. We're sorted. We're done. All over. Thank you very much. Thank you to Fred R. Cooper, to Professor Adam Proctor, to our wonderful special guest, Joe Legend Blair. And we will look forward to seeing you next time. Thank you. I'm Matt Cooper. We're the Same Old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth if we win or we lose.